there's no point in commenting.
Because then you read one verse towards the end that Krishna's pastimes are
eternal
like him, and so that he manifests the paraphernalia that he needs in pastime or something. So yeah. I was just wondering, like, if this manifests the personalities all over again, like a different demon taking the form of a horse. Or
yeah, Krishna can certainly do that, but your question was specifically about that particular soul, that the same soul, Kamsa soul.
We hear, like, in the Krishna book that Kamsa was previously the son of Kalanini.
Yeah.
All right, so then, is the other Kamsa the same Kamsa?
Okay. No, we don't. We could speculate.
Since I was not present for the earlier discussions, what is the purpose of this literature, Maharaj? Is it explaining the Bhagavatam? Or?
But it is explaining the Bhagavatam. It's a commentary. In one sense, it's a very unique commentary on the Bhagavatam because Uttara asks her son, please describe the essence of what you heard in the past 7 days from Shukadeva Goswami, that which you heard has made you, as you've just told me, completely reassured, even though you know death is coming. Don't worry, Mother. What I've heard from Shukadeva Goswami has placed me in a fearless condition. So what is it that you've heard? Can you say the essence of it? Srimad Bhagavatam's essence. So he says, well, normally at a time like this we don't go into, but your question is so nice and you're so enthusiastic that, but I'll have to do it in the form of a narration, and here's the narration. This is the essence. It's the essence of what he heard. It's a number of things simultaneously, very conveniently or expertly. Because prior to that, it's the son of Maharaj Parikshit, Janamejaya, wanting to hear about his father and his ancestors, the Pandavas. So he heard about that in the form of Mahabharata, of a different version than Valmiki, than Vyasadeva's Mahabharata, but another version of another authorized version that Jaimini narrates. And so having heard that Mahabharata, he wants to hear more, and so Jaimini says, okay, here is more. It's an addendum to Mahabharata. So this is an addendum to Mahabharata. But so within the, it's a story within a story within a story. And the within the story, the final the story within the story within the story is answering the question, who is the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy? Since the message of bhakti is, as I've been trying to emphasize, and we visit the places that we're visiting during Parikram, it's our Gaudiya Vaishnava teaching is receiving descending mercy. And one of the essential ways to receive that descending mercy is to place oneself in a very humble mood at the feet of that recipient of Krishna's mercy and implore them for their mercy. In that very, very prayerful mood. In a service mood. So that's part of the essence of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. To do like that in order to advance further and further. So these narrations naturally attract our attention to Krishna. Naturally. And that's part of the preparing of the Brahman to receive Krishna's mercy. It's preparing us to receive Krishna's mercy by hearing the narration also. But it's anyway, yeah. And helping us to appreciate the qualities of Krishna, his compassion upon his devotees. And anyway, lots of things simultaneously. Anything else? I congratulate you all for mostly staying awake. Yeah, I've been out in the hot sun for several hours baking. Still staying awake, pretty good. Yeah.
Gopis are the best devotee of Krishna.
Devotees are the
gopis are the
most dear devotees of Lord Krishna.
But while hearing this pastimes, why it is appearing that selfish nature of gopis?
Why is it appearing what?
Selfish nature.
Selfish nature?
Yes, Krishna was going to save his devotees to Mathura, and gopis are saying, you know, whatever your situation is, you stay with us.
Selfish nature. Well, your argument or your doubt is a selfless kind of love would be, we will sacrifice everything because there are others who are suffering and in danger and difficulty, so we'll accept difficulty upon ourselves just to hurry back. But another side to their love is the intensity of their love is such, and it's not, it's the intensity of their love gives pleasure to Krishna, and the intensity of their love says, we cannot bear your separation. That's how to view these things, that it's their love is so selfless that they appear to be selfish, but it's not selfish like we would be. Again, just like the discussions that we've been having about Radha's anger toward Krishna, or today Jatila and Katila and Abhimanyu and their role of preventing obstacles, standing in the way of Radha and Krishna's loving relationship. It's all to enhance the love and the flow of loving exchange and the sweetness of that loving exchange and the excitement of that loving exchange between Radha and Krishna. Jiva Goswami gives, it's presented in the chapters of Rasalila, Jiva Goswami's commentary, where he makes very, very clear arguments countering the notion that the gopis are lusty and Krishna is lusty by this kind of answer that I'm giving you right now, but he does it with vast scriptural quotes along with logic and reason to indicate that Krishna is just enjoying with his own potencies. So there's no, in that absolute sense, there's no question of violating anything. It's Krishna and Krishna's own internal potencies. It's not like us and some other entities, male, female, embodied souls, getting into it with one another. It's Krishna and his own spiritual potencies which he's enjoying. And they're not in violation because they're Krishna's own potencies, subordinate to Krishna's will, executing activities in relation to Krishna's will. So similarly, similar to your question, their behavior in an ordinary sense would be a selfish behavior. And in the transcendental exchanges of love with Krishna, it's enjoyed by Krishna because of the purity of their love. They want nothing but Krishna's pleasure, so they act and speak the way that they act and speak. But they're impelled to act and speak the way that they do by the nature of their love for Krishna. They act in contrary ways only for the pleasure of Krishna. And it comes up again and again. Contrary ways. And all. You missed it. Krishna fought the Kaliya serpent twice. And Krishna... You missed it. She'll tell you later, though. Anything further? So tomorrow is Ekadasi, and tomorrow is our last day. So Dinabandhu's plan is that we'll just do parikram. The difference being that spots do not mar these full moons. Krishna's bed also had other elongated pillows. Especially soft are the ones he used to rest his head. A splendid canopy draped with strings of pearls further enhanced the beauty of that bed, which stood in a room fragrant with aguru incense. That palatial room, which excelled all others, as the lion excels all other animals, boasted attractive closets constructed with many kinds of valuable gems. Commentary: the canopies above the bed were not only decorative, but also served the practical purpose of shading Krishna on nights when the moon was bright. All four corners of the room were decorated with curiously constructed closets. Continuing, skillful Radha had prepared wrapped pan and was offering them to Krishna by placing them into his mouth, while Chandravati and Sri Lalita playfully massaged his lotus feet. The gopis divided up various services among themselves. Some took up yak tail fans, others held ranges of boxes with more pan. Others had several vessels for catching the falling remnants of pan, and others carried large pots of fresh water. Other gopis sang songs and recited prayers, pleasurable to his ears. Some played various musical instruments, and yet others exchanged joking words with him. Commentary: the gopis are always totally dedicated to satisfying Krishna. They sang his names and offered prayers because he is very pleased by such sankirtan. Continuing, served by all those gopis whose hearts were melting out of great affection for him, Krishna responded by distributing the prized remnants of his chewed pan, and he gave them to each gopi without letting the others see. Commentary: Krishna is more eager to fulfill the desire of his devotees than to receive their service. On this occasion, he gave the prasad of his pan to all the gopis. This does not mean, however, that Krishna treated all the gopis exactly the same way. He reciprocated with each of them individually, unseen by the others. In this way, the crest jewel among the assembly of great deceivers gratified all his beloved girlfriends with his behavior. Then, pleased by the loving talks of Sri Radhika, he took a short pastime nap. Signaled by a gesture from Krishna, the gopis, overflowing with happiness, all left for their own homes. Commentary: even when Krishna sent the gopis home, they were happy because as they were leaving, he secretly asked each of them to meet him later. Then another rasa starts. Sridham came and with some effort brought me to his house. I can't say anything about Krishna's pastimes during the night. Commentary: Sarupa's disciple might be curious. Sarupa speaking to the Brahman. Sarupa's disciple might be curious about the pastimes of Krishna, hinted at by the gopis, by looking at the gopis, moving his eyebrows, etc. But as Sarupa tells him, that topic is not for them to discuss. So Sarupa continues, I spent that night in great distress. Early next morning I went to Nanda Maharaja's residence and saw Krishna, whose body showed signs of conjugal enjoyment, asleep on his bed. Commentary: Sarupa was too excited to sleep, and so there is no mention of his waking up. At dawn, he went to see Krishna and saw fingernail scratches all over his body. Translation: Krishna's simple-hearted mother came in and sat down at his side. While she attentively took care of him in various ways, she said something under her breath. Commentary: Mother Jasoda also saw the marks, as Sarupa had seen, but was not capable of doubting. What had caused them? Probably she was capable of doubting. Her mind worked in a simple, straightforward way. She busied herself in bathing Krishna and getting him ready for the day. Mother Jasoda said, Oh, all day my little boy tended the cows in the forest, fatigued. He was happy to go to sleep. And he is still not awake. Commentary: Jasoda could hardly think that Krishna was not up yet, because he was awake all night dancing with the gopis. Instead, she thought he was still asleep because he was just a little boy. Mother Jasoda goes on, as he ran about in the forest, nasty thorns made cuts all over his body. This was Jasoda's explanation for the scratches made by the fingernails of the amorous gopis. But as she carefully examined and gently touched the marks with her hand, she wondered how thorns in the forest could have cut his lips. Well, running all over and playing wildly with the boys, he must have fallen face first into a brush. Mother Jasoda continues, oh, how painful this must have been for him. But now, being fast asleep, he is not aware of anything. And he has smeared the cudgel from his eyes all over his body, which the commentary says is the gopi's eyes cudgel, which was now smeared all over his body. He does not even know that he spilled the red pan juice from his own lips all over himself, and that by turning over and over again in the bed, he has broken his necklace, his garlands, and other ornaments. And the commentary says, the red stains on Krishna's cheeks were actually from the pan the gopis had been chewing, and his garlands and necklaces had broken while embracing them. Krishna's clothing and the protective thread on his neck were also in disarray. But Mother Jasoda ascribed all this to his rolling about in his sleep. Oh, she continued, it seems that even his bath could not wash off this saffron-colored clay from the shore of the river Jamuna. It has become like his body's inseparable friend. And again, this red clay is the kun-kun from the gopi's breasts. Yesterday evening, due to carelessness, those fickle girls neither properly bathed him nor nicely applied and wiped off the excess oils. Sri Sarup said, again and again Mother Jasoda spoke like that in front of the young girls of Braja who had just arrived there. Signs of fear, laughter, and embarrassment playfully shown on the girls' faces. Commentary. Mother Jasoda's name implies that she added to Krishna's fame. Yasha Dadu Dadao. Yasho Dadao. The gopis arrived at Nanda Maharaja's house just as she was complaining about Krishna's disheveled state. Listening to her, they became afraid that she might begin to understand what Krishna had actually been doing at night. Still, they could not help but laugh at her naive statements and shrink in embarrassment seeing the obvious signs of their dalliance. Translation. Krishna then finished his pastimes of sleep. His mother bathed him, decorated him with ornaments, and fed him along with Balaram. She made him rest for a short while, and he enjoyed talking with the gopis. Then she made preparations for his auspicious departure to the forest. And this description is very, very nice. Again, it goes through all the rasas. Translation. Although the hearts of the young gopis were pained at the thought of soon being separated from Krishna, Mother Jasoda had them sing auspicious transcendental songs and carry full pots and other auspicious items. Commentary. No matter what ecstasy impeded them, the gopis had to do their service. After all, without their singing and carrying on their heads purna kumbhas, pots containing water, yogurt, flowers, unhusked barley, parched rice, and other pure substances, Krishna's departure for the forest would not be auspicious. Translation. Seating Krishna along with his elder brother on a chair, Mother Jasoda placed on their limbs ornaments and medicinal herbs suited for the forest. commentary. Besides decorative ornaments, Yashoda also placed various items on their bodies to assure their safety, such as Garuda money, or emeralds for guarding against poison, tiger nails. I always wondered why Radha Govinda have some of those tiger nails and shark's tooth ornaments that they're decorated with. Enchanted talismans, protective threads and herbs meant for healing wounds. Continuing, Mother Yashoda engaged elderly Brahmana ladies and others in offering blessings, and she made Krishna carry out all the prescribed rituals to prepare for his outing. Commentary, elderly Brahmanis blessed Krishna, as did the other older gopis. Krishna was more eager to get going than to touch his nose with his fingers and carry out other protective rituals. But his mother gave him no choice. Taking the lunch his mother gave him for noontime, Krishna stirred the cows from their rest and, placing them in front and playing his flute, set off. Commentary. Mother Yashoda had prepared lunch in advance for Krishna to take with him. He packed as much of it as he could in a bag, tied to a stick. Then he aroused the cows who were lying down and drove them forward, urging them on with the music of his flute. Continuing, just then, his companions, who were all fit to be his close friends, came out from the cowherd village in groups and gathered all around him. Again, different rasas are being stirred here. The cowherd boys, commentary, needed only to hear Krishna's flute to know that it was time to leave, because their attention was never diverted to anything other than pleasing Krishna. It hardly mattered whether they had finished having breakfast or preparing themselves. If Krishna were going to the forest, they had to follow right behind. There were a great number of these companions of Krishna, and they naturally divided themselves into groups led by prominent boys. All of them, however, were completely fit to be with the Supreme Lord in such close friendship. Continuing, at one moment he and the boys played their flutes, at another their buffalo horns, at still another they played various instruments fashioned from leaves. Thus they showed off by playing various kinds of music. Commentary, the boys made noisemakers out of blades of dharva grass and leaves they picked up from both sides of the path. Anybody know how to do that? Us Americans know how to do it. Translation, Krishna stood with his brother while their friends, playthings in hands, joyfully sang, danced, and glorified them. Commentary, among the various things the boys carried were food and drink, balls, drums, fans, flags, seats, umbrellas, chamar fans, hand cymbals, and wooden shoes, the paraphernalia for the games in the forest. They were very happy to be away from their homes and on their way to the forest where they could play however they liked. Continuing, Krishna's elder brother walked in front and I walked behind. The girls, unable to tolerate being separated from Krishna, found excuses to follow as well, and left the village, helplessly pulled by the ropes of love. Commentary. Here Sarup only gives the gopis a slight mention, referring to them as simply Ta, meaning those girls, Taha, because anything he says about them might stir memories of their special relationship with Krishna and disturb the mood that Sarup is trying to set. Even though his relationship with Krishna was in Sakya Rasa, if he were to remember the gopi's love for Krishna, Sarup would be unable to control his ecstasy. The gopis could hardly justify their walking out of the village in broad daylight and in front of everyone, but being helplessly attracted to Krishna, they were unable to tolerate his absence. Now another rasa. Mother Jasoda saw him perspiring from an ecstatic mood and came to wipe his face. Milk flowing from her breasts, she went with him as far as the outer gates of the village. Commentary. Krishna's face may have been perspiring from his longing to be with the gopis that arose when he saw them following behind. Mother Jasoda, however, was only concerned with wiping his face. First she wiped with her hand, and when that didn't work, she used the edge of her garment. I'm just going to go on for a few more verses because it goes up to the point where Nanda... Anyway. At his request, Mother Jasoda returned back toward the house. But oh, after two or three steps, she craned her neck and anxiously went back to her son. She prepared pan for him and put some in his mouth and some in his hand. She again turned toward the house, but again quickly came back to him. Commentary. Just like the first time, Yashoda again nervously turned around again, and after craning her neck to see him, came back to him. Translation. Right on the path, she fed her son some fruits and other sweet things and gave him something to drink. Again she started going back to the house and again turned around. Thoroughly examining her son's clothes and other things, she put everything neatly in order. Once more she turned back and again came back to him. Then she plaintively instructed him. Commentary. Yashoda was so anxious when she spoke to Krishna because she knew he was very naughty and was likely to ignore her advice. She said, "My dear child, don't go too far into the impenetrable woods and never enter the forest where there are thorns." In this way, with a pitiful voice, she beseeched him with lengthy advice. Then, once again, she turned towards home, took a few steps, and came back. "My dear boy Rama, you stay in front of your younger brother, and you, Sridham, stay behind your friend with Sarup. Amsha should stay on his right, and you, Subal, stay on his left." Straw between her teeth, she implored them with these and other requests. Then she looked intently at her son. Commentary. Balaram, as the most competent of the boys, should walk in front of Krishna. The others would spontaneously take up their proper places around Krishna, but just to make sure they would, she exhorted them anyway. Other requests indicated by the phrase iti adhikam were that the boys should not let Krishna go into the thorny and dangerous places, and they should provide shade if the sun became too intense, and that they should be sure he ate nicely at lunch. Coming to the end of her list of requests, to evoke promises from Krishna and the other boys that they would do what she had asked, she looked intensely at Krishna's face. Continuing, thus, going back and forth anxiously again and again, Mother Yashoda showed concern greater than that of a very affectionate cow for her newborn calf. Commentary. This exchange between Yashoda and Krishna went on for some time, but Sarup wanted to avoid his description continuing indefinitely. Continuing. Her son then bowed down to her, took hold of her feet, and embraced her. With some effort, He used various pretexts, and finally his own strong statements to make her turn back. Commentary. Krishna hoped that by showing this elaborate display of respect and affection, he could convince his mother of how seriously he took her words. He reminded her that he also had to eat breakfast and attend to that she had to eat her own breakfast and had to attend to various household chores. But when all his reasoning failed to convince her, he finally simply insisted very strongly that she go back. All this he had to do several times before she finally relented. Continuing, Mother Jasoda stood right there on that elevated spot, crying, milk dripping from her breasts, motionless like a painted picture, and watched from a distance as he entered the forest. Hare Krishna. Well, that ends a section. Maybe we should end there. There's another scene that is very, very... Nanda comes forward. And then a whole scene with Nanda Maharaj. And the forest animals are in the forest waiting, and Nanda is still holding on to the moments that he has with Krishna, and there's this tension back and forth.
No time to read it.
Shall I read it? Okay, here's the next text. But the lovely gopis continued to follow him. Their throats choked with tears, they could no longer sing. Nor could they see through the streams of tears, and their feet stumbled, unable from shyness and fear to do or say anything. They were drowning in a great ocean of remediless sorrow. Commentary. As expressed by the word tu, meaning however, the gopi's mood is even more exalted than Mother Yashoda's. In fact, being his most beloved devotees, the gopis are endowed with all excellent qualities. In texts, these two texts above, they describe how they were overwhelmed by various emotions. Their naturally endowed shyness, which decorated their personalities most of the time. Fear of what their elders were thinking when they left the village without permission, and what the consequences might be. In the village, they could counteract the pain of separation from Krishna by embracing and kissing him. But now that he was going away for the day, there was nothing they could do. They lacked the strength even to ask, how can we live like this? Well, not one well-known psychological principle is Nivedya Dukkham Sukhino Bhavanti. Unhappy people can regain their peace of mind by revealing the cause of their distress. Interesting psychological principle. In this case, however, the gopis could not even express themselves. And so, they remained adrift in the vast ocean of their misery. Continuing, having stolen the hearts and the eyes of these young gopis, who had come quite far from the cowherd village, Krishna, with some endeavor, stopped them. And as they looked at him, he repeatedly asked them to turn back. Krishna was anxious, and so to stop them, he assured them again and again through a trusted messenger and by his own gestures he craned his neck to glance at them with love, made signals with his eyebrows, and did other things. They stopped in front of his mother and stood, shy and afraid, motionless, just like her. Commentary. The boys were now approaching the dense forest, an unsafe place for young girls. They had to be sent back. By sending Krishna, this is editing problem. By sending signals, I think, Krishna managed to convince them from going any further. By words sent through a boy acting as a messenger, and by Krishna's own gestures, like knitting his eyebrows, shaking his head, and biting the tip of his tongue. Gopis then joined Mother Yashoda on the same hill where they stood like pictures and cried profusely, just like her. Next comes Nanda. The king of the cowherds naturally loved Krishna very much, but upon seeing his wife's concern, he was enslaved by excessive affection. Even though Nanda Maharaj had gone with Krishna for a great distance, and even though the elder cowherds had also followed along, Nanda Maharaj was unable to turn back. Having seen the great burden of love all the people of Braja bore for his son. Commentary. As king of the cowherd community, it was normal for Nanda to be surrounded by priests, advisors, and other Brajavasis, and so, along with Nanda, other leaders of the community, including his elder brother, Upananda, were also following Krishna. But even out of consideration for their comfort, Nanda was unable to turn back. Continuing, even though Nanda was delighted to see many auspicious omens and see the animals and other creatures all very happy, still he was distraught over being separated from his son. Commentary, the animals were displaying auspicious symptoms. Their faces and bodies were full and were circling Nanda clockwise. The deer, birds, and other forest creatures were happy because the night, which was the time for their being separated from Krishna, had passed, and now it was time for Krishna to join them in the forest. Again and again, Nanda embraced his son and his son's elder brother. Both separately and together. He smelled their heads and shed tears in the pain of great love for them. Then, same thing he did with Mother Yashoda. His son bowed down to him, reminded him of the many duties he had to perform, and sent him home. Nanda turned back and stood motionless, his gaze fixed on Krishna. Commentary. Krishna convinced his father that he was needed at home to protect the villagers from becoming too wretched over Krishna's absence. Also, in the afternoon, Nanda would have to organize the decorating of the village for his son's return. Translation. When Nanda's two sons had gone far enough into the forest that he could no longer see them, or hear any sound from them, he finally turned back toward the cowherd village. Commentary. For a while, even after the boys and their animals were too far away to be seen, some sounds could be heard, like cows mooing and horns being blown. But when even these sounds were inaudible, Nanda finally went home. After engaging servants as messengers to bring news of Krishna, Nanda consoled his wife and the gopis and took them back to their homes. Singing of Krishna's pastimes, the gopis entered the village where they spent the day absorbed in thoughts of his company. And this will be our last to read to one. The gopis are Krishna's greatest devotees, dedicated to him even more intensely than Sri Nanda and the other elder cowherd men and women. The gopis spent the entire day fully absorbed in the sankirtan of singing about the rasa dance and other pastimes they had shared with him. They remembered how they enjoyed these pastimes and anticipated having more pastimes with him in the near future. Some of the songs of the gopis are recorded in the 10th canto, 35th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here's one. The gopis sang. When Mukunda vibrates the flute he has placed to his lips, this is 10th canto, chapter 35. Stopping its holes with his tender fingers, he rests his left cheek on his left arm and makes his eyebrows dance. At that time, the demigoddesses traveling in the sky with their husbands, the siddhas, become amazed. As those ladies listen, they are embarrassed to find their minds yielding to the pursuit of lusty desires, and in their distress, they are unaware that the belts of their garments are loosening. So the final verse here, Sri Sarup is explaining to his student, the Mathura Brahman, only a person with infinite capacity can describe these dealings in full detail, but why would an intelligent person